Fine Mischief by Josh Webster, as read by Kate Roswin. Faultwill stood alone in a glade before a stone circle, feeling an utter fool. No small feat given his profession of court jester to the Duke. Faultwill spent hours hauling the stones across the ground as the wise woman instructed, arranging them in a circle over the cold iron chain hidden with grass and leaves. He owed the blacksmith a ridiculous amount of coin, but fool or no, Faultwill needed help. He'd never intended to become a fool, to waste his days and nights performing for the Duke's court and the aristocrats who composed it. Who dreams of a life standing on one's head while overpowdered and undereducated nobles glut themselves on the spoils of the kingdom, their hinders affixed to gilt chairs soiled with their own filth? Faultwill started out in the world as a scholar, a scribe at a nearby abbey where a parent, he assumed, left him in his infancy. The monks taught him to read and write not long after he gained the agility to hold a quill and the strength to lift the bound tomes and folios chained to the library shelves. From then on, he spent his days perfecting his script, copying the mostly Latin texts that composed the abbey's 112-volume library. Faultwill knew the scriptures too, of course, and copied them. But he preferred the so-called pagan treasures, as the head of the abbey often called them, of writers such as Ovid, Horace, and Cicero. In his 14th year, the library burned. Faultwill turned his head from the blazing abbey in fear he'd inhale the ashes of wisdom, somehow tainting himself with the foolish cruelty of the soldiers joyous at the conflagration. The Duke desired the abbey's wealth and cared little for the meddling of the learned monks, who had a nasty habit of feeding the peasants and teaching them dangerous concepts such as charity and stewardship. To remove a nuisance and increase his coffers, the royal had become a fly in the ear of the bishop, whispering of heresy. The bishop, a dunce as fine as any to wear a crown, allowed the Duke to strike against the abbey and its inhabitants, then claim it as his own. In keeping with his legacy as boor and adult, he ordered burned anything he could not fathom, and fated the learned monks to imprisonment and execution. Faultwill became a fool when, brought before the Duke and asked to confess his crimes and beg for forgiveness, the boy said he wished for none and would much appreciate a clean and uncomplicated death, executed by an able and experienced professional. The Duke, impressed by Faultwill's brio and failing to recognize he spoke the simple truth, laughed at the boy, the rest of the court joining him in forced and hideous glee. The sound still rang in Faultwill's ears each time he stood in the presence of the court. But the wrath of a teen gave way to the resentful wit of an aging man, and his jests grew ever sharper, until he could no longer keep his tongue from cutting deep, even as he knew true blades threatened him. The Duke suffered offense from none, and the jester, it seemed, could offer nothing other. Faultwill did not wish to die. He wished to survive and escape, perhaps make his way to the Mediterranean, its crossroads of people, nations, and ideas. His pagan texts still existed in other lands, were celebrated even, and the scholar within the jester forced him to carry on in hopes of gazing upon their pages once again. And so, with a heart unwilling to die and a tongue leading nowhere else, he went to the wise woman who knew the secrets of the land. If Faultwill sought to survive the court, he reasoned, it would require the advice of the finest trickster and jester of all. He needed the wisdom of the Fae, in particular, that of Robin Goodfellow, the one known as Puck. Having completed his preparations for the summoning, Faultwill lay on his back watching the sky, the grass cooling against his ears and cheeks as he waited for the appropriate moment to begin the litany that would lure the Fae to the glade. He dozed in and out of wakefulness until he opened his eyes to see the moon at the apogee of the heavens, holding court over the stars. He stood, faced the east on the border of the stone and chain circle, and chanted the old words of the Isles, the language of the people who dwelt in these lands when the Fae roamed free, before the church and the Romans and the invaders. As he intoned the spell, his tongue grew quick, less fumbling and hesitant of the strange syllables, his confidence and volume increasing. The air crisped and charged, grew thick and strange with a metallic scent and taste. The soft moonlight bent and swirled into a twist of darkness in the midst of the circle, a miasma of cloths and teeth and eyes resolving into a creature. The Fae stood taller than any man Faultwill had met, even the captain of the Duke's guard. Its arms and legs sprouted from its body as saplings, knotted with bone joints at strange intervals, its fingers and toes curved and sharp as scythe blades. It smiled at him with needle teeth, eyes rubies and blood in turns of the light. Black fur drank the scant illumination, and the monster leered at the man, its smile a racking shudder.
I am Puck, descended from the Tuatha De Danann, jester of the court of King Oberon and Queen Titania, rulers of Faerie.
Its voice scraped Faultwill's ears, the words tasting of blood and char.
Some call me Goodfellow, though I am neither. And yet you called, Duke's fool, and I answer.
It knew him. Faultwill pushed the fact away and forced power into his voice. I have summoned you, Mischief Maker, and by the power of the stones and binding chains, you will answer me truthfully. It laughed in the tones of vexed hornets and growling wolves as it extended a hand, then a single claw, beyond the edge of the protective circle. Faultwill stood frozen, his imminent death dawning in his consciousness, and wondered if it would prove better than a hangman's axe. The claw stopped an inch beneath his chin. It carried the same scent as a skinning blade.
The death I offer would be more dignified,
Puck answered, lowering its hands and sitting back on its haunches.
A servant of mine removed the chains as you dozed. My ears hear in all places, Faultwill, your thoughts included.
You will kill me for my impertinence? The face shook its head, the edges of the needle grin arching higher.
I'm rather a fan of impertinence, and I only appear to a summons if I choose, and I have chosen. What do you wish of me, Jester?
Faultwill couldn't think, the creature's voice and presence a constant ache in his teeth, a roiling in his stomach. He heard the Fae possessed uncommon beauty and charm, but before him stood a monster. Puck stood, stretching its form into the night, its moonshadow cast far across the glade.
Am I not beautiful, Jester? Am I terrible? Might not that be a thing of beauty among my kind?
Perhaps, Faultwill answered.
Or perhaps I am simply hideous, and the obvious is true. In all cases, the job of the fool is to point out the truth in all its absurdity. Take your Duke, for instance. Do you find anything royal or grand about his personage? Some suggestion of divine providence in his rule?
Faultwill thought of the beard dyed purple with spilled mead, the stained royal robes, so much food thrown from smacking lips that the castle rats grew fat. A man no more worthy than his sycophantic and ignorant retinue. No. Puck stroked its chin, twisting the hairs in its claws.
And you speak this truth, and now the Duke considers your death, yes?
The jester nodded.
I will assist you, fool.
Why? What do you ask in return? Faultwill, like all men, knew to fear the terrible bargain of a fae. Puck shrugged.
Nothing. Consider this a gift, for I am a maker of mischief, and in you I see fine mischief.
It leaned forward until it loomed above him.
Now tell me and speak the truth. When you make your jests, when you aren't fumbling apples through the air or rolling about with the royal hounds, what do you hope your words achieve?
I hope my words entertain. The face sniffed the top of his head.
A lie produces such a rich scent. If your kind only knew. Do you truly think you've buried all the aspirations of your scholarship, the catechisms of your youth? Do you think yourself one who simply entertains?
It tapped a claw on his forehead before he could recoil.
What do you want?
I want them to become better. To learn. Faultwill only considered the words as they fell from his lips. Puck sat back on the grass with a sigh.
And there we have it. The truth. How do you feel?
Faultwill felt a child's embarrassment for hoping for such a simple thing from those who offered him no respect or dignity. I feel a fool. Truly. He expected laughter, another question, but Puck offered neither. It only nodded, let the silence sit. When Puck spoke again, it did so in soft, simple tones, in what might pass for kindness among the Fae.
I have been jester to the Fairy Court for eons, Faultwill, and I have learned much of my role and its nature. The most important thing I learned, though, I learned from a mortal.
It gestured to the grass, and Faultwill sat.
Many years ago, a spy of the court, one of my protégés, returned to Faerie's Emerald Fields with tales of a bard, a woman whose incredible voice and masterful songwriting enraptured not only her patrons and the people of her land, but those all around. Wise men, barons, clergy, and aristocrats from all over the isles, and even some from across the sea, traveled to hear the finest musician their age knew. Now, a fine voice and swift fingers require both talent and training, but technique is but a road with beauty as its destination. Achieving the true grandeur of music requires the opportune coupling of technique and subject, as a song of the ages must resonate with the ear and the heart. The bard in question understood the vagaries of the spirit as the star understands the night, and she crafted ballads of sorrow, joy, and the beauty of human emotion. Her melodies transported the souls of listeners to the grandest heights or the darkest corners of humanity at her whim. Of course, the Fae desire to hear such songs, as our kind envy mortals nothing but their emotions. The Fae know lust without love, beauty without passion, and even our wrath is cruel and cold. So a chance to hear songs distilling the fine vintages of the heart? King Oberon declared in the name of his queen that the bard would sing for the court on the coming Beltane. Oberon kept his promise with some assistance from myself, and, as the summer began, the bard stood before a grand banquet of the court, dressed in a gown sewn by Titania herself, holding the finest lute Fey enchanters could craft.
Puck paused, considered the grass.
I spent a fair amount of time with the lass in her time with us. She spoke of her craft with clear joy and observed the world and the people within it with an aware heart, calibrated to what truly mattered in a human life. I rather enjoyed her company, I must say, which I cannot claim for most of your kind.
Present company included? Faultwill asked. Puck continued.
She did not belong in Faerie, and I knew her time with us would bring, as for so many of your kind, nothing but ill. But a jester remains a jester, and a king remains a king, as you well know. Faerie is a land of glimmering things and creatures with jagged edges and sharp teeth. And a kind spirit, such as the bard, could see nothing in our kingdom or its inhabitants but the merciless seed from which all springs. Such vicious grandeur threw her soul into the deepest of despair, despite our many attempts to deceive her with lovely pretenses and baubles. And so, come Beltane, as she stood before the gathered royals of the Fae Court, she brought her fingers to the strings and inhaled a deep breath rich with perfume and enchantment, bearing full knowledge of the heartless creatures who sat in rapt attention, drunk on the deception and despair of her brothers and sisters. With sorrow in her hazel eyes, she began to play, to sing. I believe,
the Fae said, loading a pipe produced from the midst of air.
She gave her finest performance that night. She summoned all she knew of the frail grandeur and rich pools of mortal experience, and distilled from this the hurt and pain the Fae might cause a mortal heart. She sang of the suffering of husbands, wives, and children who lost their beloveds in the endless mazes and forgotten mists of our traps. She spun slow reels, capturing the cruelty of Fae tricks, of the human ruins we leave behind to shambles through wasted days. Tears fell from her lips as they sang of children stolen from their beds, the agony of mothers and fathers knowing their own body, blood, and hearts were far away, lost to the hands of cruel, capricious slavers. She sang the sins of the Fae, and she sang them true.
And they killed her, Faultwill whispered hopelessness upon him. Puck puffed at his pipe, letting the jester's sour fear settle.
They laughed,
the Fae said.
They laughed uproariously, the decorum of the court forgotten as they doubled over, wailing with joy. She proclaimed them monsters, and they knew no finer amusement. I watched her shatter. I felt it, tasted it. It was as acrid and bitter as smoke. Before the sun rose, I led her home, away from our lands. She walked beside me in silence until we reached the edges of Faerie. I saw her stare out upon her world from the border of my own, nothing in her eyes but a profound loss. She knew what sorts of things dwell in the edges now, and she would not forget. I wanted to apologize, but that, of course, isn't our way. The hospitality of the Fae does not extend to kindness.
What became of her?
She played, but her songs contained no beauty. They sounded from her with bitter rage and callous disregard, inspiring nothing in the listener but quarrelsome spirits and mead hall brawling. Her patrons fled her, and in time no village would welcome her voice as anything other than speech, if at that. The once musician found another calling, though. She sold the fine loot and clothing the court gave her and commissioned a talented smith to craft her weapons. Arrows, daggers, a sword. Of cold iron, blessed by a wise woman and a bishop who knew of our kind. For the remainder of her life, she hunted us with no small success. Oberon tasked me with tracking her down and punishing her transgressions. But...
Puck shrugged.
I've been known to fail now and again.
It stood, stretching in the moon's slim light.
Now then, Faultwill. Do you savvy the meaning of my little tale?
He nodded. I will fail. To change them, I mean.
I'm afraid so,
Puck said, his voice now soft as a morning's breeze.
You cannot appeal to virtues or sentiments long forgotten or abandoned. My people never possess the quality you call humanity. But for your kind to forego it as so many do.
It spit on the grass, shook its head.
I changed as well, that Beltane. I was once as beautiful in my seeming as any other member of the court, donning all the glamours I could muster. But after leading the bard home, I returned in the form you see before you. Oberon and Titania demanded I make myself beautiful in their presence, but I refused. This shape unnerves them, angers them, so they pretend I'm at another lark, a ruse I will forgo in a few centuries.
Puck cackled, his edges sinking into darkness, vanishing into the night, until nothing but his needled grin remained.
They are wrong,
the smile said.
And I am rather done with jokes.
Faultwill stood alone in a glade before a stone circle. He somersaulted across the stone floor of the banquet room, his muscles sore, his skin red from slapping against the stone. He hated it. The entire show, the expectation he would fall for them, debase himself at their whim. Still, in the months since he'd summoned Puck, Faultwill had improved in his tumbling, his juggling. He learned to craft witticisms that appealed to the Duke's false sense of inborn worth and value, jests that justified the way the nobles treated the farmers, craftsmen, and merchants, let alone the poor and the sick. They adored him for it, showered him in applause and praise. Puck spoke true and gave fine advice. It gave even more, as Faultwill learned, when he awoke one morning to find hemlock seeds in a bag on his windowsill, a dream of how to prepare and use them fresh in his memory. After all the training and practice, his newfound agility made it a simple task to creep into the kitchen undetected, and his quick hands poured the poison into the banquet mead with incredible grace. A sack of his clothing and possessions waited near the cottage of the wise woman, and if all went to plan, his feet would touch the shores of the Mediterranean Sea before anyone knew the wiser. Faultwill rose from the floor, noting the noble faces going pale, the sweat gathering on brows. He smiled and bowed, imagining the sea salt breeze of his bruised skin, the feeling of linen page beneath his fingers. Puck spoke true indeed. When the time came, Faultwill made fine mischief.